This is a message for members of Thrivent Financial for Lutherans. Thrivent Financial has a new charitable grant program called Thrivent Choice. Thrivent Choice allows you to designate charitable outreach funds to Lutheran Public Radio. For more information, look for the Thrivent logo under the Donate page of our website, issuesetc.org, or ask your Thrivent representative about Thrivent Choice. Help support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. with Thrivent Choice.
One thing we like to do around here on Issues Etc. is listen to what our listeners have to say. You listen, but we also like to listen as well. And one of the ways that we have to listen to you and then, well, to respond as often as we can is the Issues Etc. comment line. That number, 618-223-8384, 618-223-8384. Our listeners listen, so many of them on demand. That means they're listening after the regular broadcast, and they hear the same things you do. They have the same questions you do. And that's why we have the comment line, the Issues Etc. comment line, 618-223-8384. And begin with Issues Etc.'s own Paul Harvey.
This is Harry of Arlington Heights with a recommendation for a name adjustment for LCMS. Sensitive to the love of the Missouri name, eliminating global confusion, and stimulating worldwide affiliation. As a 1995 LCMS convention delegate, I reviewed an overture from Texas District President Kiesnick to change the name to International Lutheran Church, noting that name would be listed in the Chicago telephone book amid dozens of business and labor organizations, such as International Brotherhood of Electricians, with a Southside storefront, International House of Prayer, as the only other religious organization. I made a counter-overture that the name should be Lutheran Church International, which would put it very near the then-present LCMS listing. Dr. Kiesnick agreed, but neither name reached the floor. I say adjustment, not name change, because my proposed motion would involve more. One, change the name to Lutheran Church International, a.k.a. LCI. Two, simultaneously adopt a temporary coterminous subsidiary known as the Missouri Synod of LCI. And three, anticipate and encourage petitions of other synods, such as from districts splitting off from Missouri to also be LCI synods, and other church groups worldwide becoming LCI synods with no need to struggle with what Missouri means. Although not adopted, I felt the name had merit, and to control its use, I incorporated Lutheran Church International, using LCMS Article 2 in the charter. As a further lock on the name, I registered my personal vehicles in the LCI name for over a decade, up through 2011. A personal benefit arose when I was stopped in a trap on Highway 20 on the way to the Fort Wayne Seminary. The Indiana trooper ran my plates and was so impressed, he gave me a pass. Can't you see those petitions pouring in from all districts except Missouri? Watch as they come from East, West, South Africa, from Russia, Ukraine, Finland, Denmark, from Central America, Canada, South America, from Australia, Indonesia, Korea, and Japan. The LCI superstructure is already in place. All we need is a name adjustment. Thank you.
It's often debated what churches ought to call themselves, and I think this is one of the burdens that church bodies bear, because no name does it just right. Every name is open to misinterpretation, ambiguity, and misinformation. Every single one of them. And believe me, everyone's tried. You know, I think the best success actually was probably the one that got nabbed first, and that would be the Catholic Church. It's a name that I wish we could recapture, because it says what it is the church wants to confess about its message, about what the church is in the world, this one Christian faith received by the saints, this one faith that has been one for all people, all time, in all places. That's what Catholic means. Of course, the meaning of that name has also been misunderstood. There's just not a perfect one out there because words don't do it justice, what the church really is. When we come back, more from the Issues Etc. comment line on this Tuesday afternoon, January the 31st. If you call, I will answer.
If you follow, I'll pick you up. Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Hello, this is Pastor Kevin Golden of Village Lutheran Church in Ladue, Missouri. The saints at Village Lutheran are proud to be part of the Issues Etc. 300, sharing in their Christ-centered, cross-focused proclamation of the gospel. If you find yourself in St. Louis, join us on Sundays at 8:15 and 10:45 for the Divine Service, 9:30 for Bible study and Sunday school, as we receive Christ's gifts of forgiveness, life, and salvation. Or visit us on the web at www.villagelutheranchurch.org.
This is a message for members of Thrivent Financial for Lutherans. Thrivent Financial has a new charitable grant program called Thrivent Choice. Thrivent Choice allows you to designate charitable outreach funds to Lutheran Public Radio. For more information, look for the Thrivent logo under the Donate page of our website, issuesetc.org, or ask your Thrivent representative about Thrivent Choice. Help support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. with Thrivent Choice.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. We're going through the Issues Etc. comment line, responding to your comments on this Tuesday afternoon. I got one more thought on what Harry left on the comment line when he was talking about name changes and names adjustments for churches. And it's true, words don't, just one little set of words don't do justice to what the true Christian faith is, how the church is in the world. And that's why I just don't think it matters that much. In the long run, as long as how we name ourselves as a church body doesn't contradict a sound confession of the faith. But I don't know that it matters that much. You know what does matter? They talk a lot about branding the church or marketing the church. The very best way for a denomination or a church to brand or market itself is to simply be the church and confess what the church confesses. I said words don't do it justice, but there are words that say what the church is. The church says them, if they're faithful, every Sunday. The words of those historic creeds that confess what it is the Christians believe, what it is the church holds fast to as the faith once delivered to the saints. Now, it will help us brand ourselves if we are faithful in our confession, bold and public in our confession. But it may not be good marketing. Good marketing has as a result that you are popular, that you are well-known and well-thought of. Well, history's taught us that if the church brands itself with a sound, bold, public confession, it doesn't turn out to be popular. It may be well-known, but it certainly won't be well-thought of. So we got to decide what we're going to do. We make the bold confession, and it'll probably be a marketing disaster by the world's standards because they're not going to like to hear what we have to say. But at least they will know what it is we have to say. Up next, some comments about the judicial branch.
This is Paul in Milwaukee, non-lawyer who knows some history, commenting on the nature of the U.S. constitutional law that came up in two programs in the last couple weeks. In one show, the guest said that the self-asserted judicial supremacy of the Supreme Court did not always apply. The case of Marbury versus Madison, 1803, in which the court in this judicial review struck down part of a federal law, was the first time such happened. As pointed out, the right of the court to negate law has not been effectively challenged since by the president, Congress, the states, or citizens. The Issues Etc. guest proposed a finding by Congress that judicial review is unconstitutional and that the 14th Amendment gave the Congress power to legislatively replace, for example, the Roe versus Wade decision with protection for the unborn, contrary to the self-expressed judicial supremacy. Some would say legislation from the bench. On the other program, unchecked judicial review was stated to be good law. This where the Delaware governmental body that prayed the Lord's Prayer for years legally argued when it was challenged separation of church and state argument that it should be permitted to continue to pray and perhaps pray truly and not as civil religion. Could Congress make a finding in a new law against the separation of church and state in this case? Separation has a mixed history. Taxes for churches were paid in the colonies, and in the 1892 Holy Trinity labor case, the Supreme Court used half its argument to show that the U.S. was a Christian nation. The main current separation justification is the 1947 Emerson case, in which the court belatedly saw separation in the 1787 Constitution, the, quote, wall of separation, unquote, being mentioned in a private opinion of narrow non-binding purpose of President Thomas Jefferson to a group of Baptists who had doubtlessly heard that he was an atheist. Would Luther have been silenced without a state to support his teaching? Thanks for listening.
Well, in answer to your last question, had Luther not had the protection of his prince, he would have been dead. So he did benefit from the protection of his prince. Of course, Luther was actually operating in a context where there was not, at least recognized in the system of government they had, a strict separation of church and state. Look, we're not only stuck with it as a matter of practicality in the United States, but as Christians, even if there were no doctrine of the separation of church and state embedded in our laws and our thinking, even if that didn't exist, Christians would still have to maintain the distinction between the two kingdoms, which is thoroughly biblical, and we'd be bound to maintain that regardless of whether or not we lived in a state where separation was recognized or not. Now, I will clarify something, and I think he makes reference to a conversation we had with Dr. John Wart Montgomery. I do not think that Dr. Montgomery at any time said that unchecked judicial review was good. What he said was the decision the court made with regard to the separation of church and state and prayer in the school was good. There's a difference between saying that and a wholehearted, unqualified endorsement of unchecked judicial review. I actually do not know Dr. Montgomery's thoughts on judicial review or the Supreme Court's claim to supremacy in deciding matters of law. He may actually disagree with it, but you can disagree with that and actually believe that the court makes good decisions, which is one of the things that Dr. Robbie George was saying. The problem is not so much unchecked judicial review. When it comes to Roe v. Wade, it was a bad decision. Even if the court held its proper place in the three branches, it was still a bad decision to be made. And he's trying to point us perhaps a legal avenue away from Roe v. Wade that would not require changing the complexion of the Supreme Court, but in fact maybe putting the court back in its proper place in the three branches of government.
Hi, this is Jonathan Collin from France. First, I would like to say thank you very much for your program. It very much ministers to us, those of us who are outside the comforts and the luxuries of having a confessional Lutheran congregation nearby, that we are able to hear sound doctrine, hear the issues of our home culture being addressed through a free podcast. So thank you very much for this great resource, and pray you that God continue to bless you and keep you in this radio ministry.
Well, it's very nice to hear from our listeners in any circumstance, but always nice to hear from them overseas, and we do on a regular basis. I'm glad he understands what this is, that this is radio outreach. This isn't the church. You know, I was speaking a moment ago about the church branding itself in the world, and one of the things that the church can do is make this bold confession through every possible avenue available to it. Sad to say, what the church has done of late is curtail its confession and try to ramp up its marketing. It wants to make a good impression in the world rather than making the good confession in the world, and the two could not be more at odds. Again, if we only understand the church's place in history, we will understand that when the church has tried to make a good impression, it has always come at the cost of the good confession. And when when the church makes the good confession, it often leaves a very bad impression.
Hello. In what way do I keep the law after conversion? In Concordia, the Lutheran Confessions, the editor's preface to the Of Love and Fulfilling the Law says this: Lutherans believe that Christians improve at keeping the law, and they require good works. I always thought that we could never keep the law because we are simultaneously saint and sinner. So in what way do I keep the law after conversion?
It's a very good question. Let's see. Only got a few minutes to respond. We understand that we are both saint and sinner. We are 100% both. And the saint, the new man, that is Christ in us, he keeps the law perfectly, from a pure heart, always. After all, it is Christ in us, this new man. The old Adam, the old man, the sinner in us, and again, we are 100% both, the old man in us never keeps the law, not once, not even a little. He is a rebel. He is a sworn enemy of God. And yet, you are both at the same time, that new man and that old man, the old Adam and Christ in you. And it is not so much a struggle between the two as it is putting the old man to death. Does that mean we ever cease to sin? No. Does that mean, and you're quite right to say, you know, do we keep the law? The answer to that question is no, we don't. Never perfectly as the law demands. Because I am both old man and new man, do I desire to keep the law? Absolutely. The new man desires nothing but to keep the law. Does the old man desire to keep the law? No, never, and he cannot be reformed. So when we talk about never being able to keep the law, that's an implicit acknowledgement of the fact that on this side of the resurrection, we remain at the same time both saint and sinner. And we don't worry about moral progress. We simply do not worry about it because the only standard is the perfect standard of the Ten Commandments, and you never progress toward perfection. We rely entirely upon the perfect obedience of another, Jesus Christ, and his law-keeping for us all the way to an obedient death on the cross. There's so much comfort in that. You'll find that same kind of comfort, relying entirely upon Christ's obedience, his righteousness, his goodness. In our Issues, Etc., Book of the Month for January. It is the last day of the month, and I'm sad to say the last day I can talk about this tremendous book called The Problem of Suffering. Go to our website and browse before you buy, issuesetc.org, or call Concordia Publishing House anytime and order The Problem of Suffering, 1-800-325-3040. I'm Todd Wilkin. Talk with you tomorrow. Thanks for listening to Issues Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Lutheran Public Radio, P.O. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.